Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 303, yet another broadcast about the German corporate control over the American media and related topics. This broadcast is titled, If Music Be the Food of Love, Munch On, Part 4. Specifically, this broadcast is going to be taking a look at German corporate control, or perhaps, in a speculative mode, underground Reich corporate control over the music business, not only in the United States, but elsewhere as well. The title comes from a passage from a Nazi tract, Serpent's Walk, that I've used many times, and in the interests of updating listeners or informing listeners who have not heard about the book before, this is allegedly a novel, I believe, that just like the book The Turner Diaries, published by the same publisher, National Vanguard Books, this book is actually a blueprint, a model, a manifesto for what the Nazi underground is doing worldwide. It's about a takeover of the United States by the descendants of the SS, literally a Third Reich gone underground, who buy into the American opinion-forming media after building up an enormous underground capital organization. They then take over the United States after infiltrating the army in the mid-21st century. That is to say, the takeover takes place in the mid-21st century, roughly 50 years from now. The book was published by National Vanguard Books, as I said. It was authored by someone who writes under the pen name of Randolph D. Calverhall, C-A-L-V-E-R-H-A-L-L, and on the back cover it describes the book, saying, Serpent's Walk explores that possibility. It assumes that Hitler's warrior elite, the SS, didn't give up their struggle for a white world when they lost the Second World War. Instead, their survivors went underground and adopted some of the tactics of their enemies. They began building their economic muscle and buying into the opinion-forming media. A century after the war, they are ready to challenge the Democrats and Jews for the hearts and minds of white Americans who have begun to have their fill of government-enforced multiculturalism and, quote, equality, unquote. And, describing the book Serpent's Walk in a discussion between a couple of the Nazi faithful named Lessing and Wrench, this book describes the passage that gives the title to the broadcast as follows. Wrench describes the Nazis and the SS going underground. The SS, what was left of it, had business objectives before and during World War II. When the war was lost, they just kept on, but from other places, Bogota, Asunción, Buenos Aires, Rio de Janeiro, Mexico City, Colombo, Damascus, Dhaka, you name it. They realize that the world is heading toward a corporocracy, 5 or 10 international super companies that will run everything worth running by the year 2100. Those super corporations exist now, and they are already dividing up the production and marketing of food, transport, steel and heavy industry, oil, the media, and other commodities. They're mostly conglomerates with fingers in more than one pie. Skipping down, we, the SS, have the say in 4 or 5. We've been competing for the past 60 years or so, and we're slowly gaining. Skipping down again, about 10 years ago, we swung a merger, a takeover, and got voting control of a super corporation that runs a small but significant chunk of the American media. Not openly with bands and trumpets or swastikas flying, but quietly. One huge corporation cuddling up to another one and gently munching it up like a great gubbing amoeba. That's the reference here, and of course the rest of the passage, familiar to listeners by now. Since then, we've been replacing executives, pushing somebody out here, bringing somebody else in there. We've swung program content around too, not much but a little, so it won't show. We've cut down on nasty Nazi movies, good guys in white hats and bad guys in black SS hats, lovable Jews versus fiendish Germans, and we have media psychologists, ad agencies, and behavior modification specialists working on image changes. And it is the cuddling and munching, to which this particular title, obviously also playing off the famous line from Shakespeare, "If music be the food of love, play on." Well, if music be the food of love, munch on, part four is the title of this program. And what we've been looking at in the past is the Bertelsmann firm. That's the third largest media corporation in the world. Up until very recently, it was entirely privately owned, and as such, not subject to nearly as much scrutiny as most firms. Now it is engaged in a stock swap, which will still enable it to expand, to control, enable the Bertelsmann firm, the Bertelsmann Foundation, excuse me, to control the firm. However, it will greatly expand its capital capabilities, and that, among other things, has permitted the firm to gain control of RTL, Europe's largest broadcaster, and in turn, it is forecast that RTL will be moving into the American telecommunications market. RTL is Europe's largest television firm, and in particular, recent ruling by the FCC with regard to the Deutsche Telekom purchase of VoiceStream will in all likelihood facilitate the movement of German corporations, even corporations controlled by German governments or other foreign governments, into the American media market. Many of the broadcasts on this series had focused on the potential takeover of by BMG of EMI. It was technically going to be a merger, but BMG, the music division of Bertelsmann and the fourth largest media company and second largest recording fourth largest music company in terms of sales and second largest recording company in the world, that music division of Bertelsmann was going to be in effect absorbing EMI. It was going to be a merger, but Bertelsmann was going to control 50%. That fell through due to the fact that the EU regulators basically were a little bit too problematic, and basically the EMI side was unwilling to sustain the negotiations for much longer. There was a very important pair of articles that appeared in the Financial Times on Monday, May 7th. That was this past Monday. This program is being recorded on May 13th of the year 2001. This article describes not only the next projected move, or one of the possible moves by Bertelsmann to make BMG number one in music, but also describes the rationale that Thomas Mittelhoff, Bertelsmann's very, very skillful CEO, had in forging the alliance between Bertelsmann and Napster. And we're going to analyze the Bertelsmann-Napster deal, and also a prospective move, or a possible move, in which Bertelsmann might acquire Zomba Records, a very important independent music firm in which Bertelsmann owns 20%. Zomba, as we looked at last week in For the Record program number 300, is owned by a fellow named Clive Calder. I described him as a mysterious South African. I think the word secretive, perhaps, or reclusive would be better. Mr. Calder is 54 years old, declines press interviews, and even the website of Zomba Records doesn't give a phone number or address, which is unusually secretive for a major music firm. It only the website only features the artists. There are no About Us links, not even a contact address or telephone number, which again is very unusual for a major music firm. Perhaps the word secretive or reclusive would be better than mysterious, but in light of the fact that Calder is 54 years old, that would make him born in roughly 1947, and in light of the fact that South Africa, as we looked at in Miscellaneous Archive Show M6 and in For the Record Program 225, was in its apartheid phase essentially an outgrowth of the Third Reich, that raises some interesting questions about Clive Calder and the possibility, and note that I stress possibility, this is, as is often the case in this program, a speculative element, the possibility that he might be associated with the Bormann Organization. South Africa was one of a number of countries that was a repository for Third Reich elements on the run, both human and financial, and it should also be noted that the Brüderbund, the core group of the apartheid government in South Africa, was closely allied with and patterned after the NSDAP, the German Nazi Party. A fellow named Graf Durkheim von Montmartre was dispatched by the Third Reich in order to not only liaise with the Bruderbund, but to help to restructure the Bruderbund along the lines of the Nazi Party. The Bruderbund was the dominant power element in the apartheid regime, and with Clive Calder being a relatively wealthy and influential, yet very reclusive and secretive individual, I think it's a reasonable question to ask, that question being, of course, whether Zomba Records, 20% owned by BMG, is a Bormann company, and whether, in fact, Clive Calder is another part of the underground Reich's media pantheon, as to coin a phrase. We're going to take a look now at a couple of interesting articles from the Financial Times of London of May 7th of the year 2001. One of them deals, they both deal with BMG. One deals with potential next moves now that the merger with EMI, really an acquisition of EMI, fell through. And also some insights into Bertelsmann's arrangement with Napster, BMG's arrangement with Napster. This first article is by Bertrand Benoit, or Bertrand Benoit, B-E-N-O-I-T. It's headlined, BMG Waits for Second Chance to Build Music Empire. Subtitled, The Record Group Remains Ambitious. The article reads in part as follows. When Thomas Middelhoff, Bertelsmann's chief executive, flew out of Brussels last Monday, he was surprisingly upbeat for a man whose plans to create the world's largest music group had just collapsed. A meeting with Mario Monti, the European Union Competition Commissioner, had made it clear a merger of Bertelsmann's BMG music business with UK rival EMI would not escape a lengthy antitrust investigation. Yet, speaking from Saint-Tropez on Tuesday, Mr. Middelhoff said, quote, I have lost my bet, but I am in a good mood because I know there are enough possibilities to reach my objectives, unquote. How New York-based BMG, the smallest of the world's five music majors, can capture the market share to propel it ahead of Universal Music Group, the current leader, is far from clear to industry observers. This is partly the result of ignorance. Listen to this next passage. If some of the discussion about BMG and Bertelsmann appears that I've engaged in over the years appears sort of abstruse to listeners, this is not a very well-known firm, and yet it's the third largest media conglomerate in the world. This is partly the result of ignorance. Wholly owned by privately held Bertelsmann, BMG is relatively unknown to analysts. Patrick Wellington, who follows the music industry for Schroeder, Salomon, Smith, Barney, admits being ignorant of the company's prospects. Very interesting indeed. If this is an investment professional, that certainly puts things in an interesting perspective. Skipping down, as Rolf Schmidholz, BMG's chief executive, suggested last week, BMG could strike cooperative deals and even make some minor acquisitions in the coming year. There is no shortage of candidates, as 24% of the music market is now held by the myriad so-called independent labels. One target could be Zomba Records, whose Jive label is 20% owned by BMG. Many BMG acts, including Britney Spears, NSYNC, and Backstreet Boys, already come from Jive, but their distribution deal is subject to regular renegotiations with the next session in July. Mr. Schmidholz last week poured some cold water on such a prospect, saying, quote, it's not an idea to buy it, but maybe to reinforce and, if possible, to broaden the partnership, unquote. Skipping down. Yet Mr. Middelhoff has ruled out the option. Instead, he thinks the commission could eventually be rallied to his argument that collective dominance is not an issue in the era of digital music and media alliances. AOL's acquisition of Time Warner and Vivendi's absorption of Universal, he says, have already changed the market, while fewer majors would also be more effective in fighting internet music piracy and imposing a standardized digital format for legitimate downloads. I think there is a case for continuing to provide the commission with information about the music market, and perhaps what could not happen today will happen in a year, unquote. In the meantime, the two groups will capitalize on their relationship, probably through a distribution and manufacturing partnership, which EMI has said could yield annual cost savings of $50 million, a far cry from the $175 million the merger would have brought, according to some estimates. What's interesting here, well, actually, there's several things interesting about this deal. First of all, note that there is now discussion of BMG buying Zomba Records, or Jive, basically Zomba Records, one of whose, arguably, whose most important label, Jive, is basically 20% owned by BMG. I would also note here that there is an interesting perspective on the Bertelsmann deal with Napster. First of all, the prospective BMG alliance with EMI, which would have further concentrated the music business, was being presented to the EU regulators by Thomas Middelhoff as being increasingly acceptable, first of all, because the acceptance of online music distribution, a la Napster, had basically changed the music market, and also, perhaps in what might be viewed as sort of a corporate concept of the Pincers movement, Middelhoff was also maintaining that due to Napster and the advent of online music distribution and the peer-to-peer technology, having greater concentration of ownership in the music industry would facilitate fighting internet music piracy and would impose a standardized digital format for legitimate downloads. And I think this gives an interesting perspective on the Bertelsmann's alliance with Napster that I've looked at in numerous broadcasts, including For the Record programs 260, 261, and 274. Still more on the perspective that Bertelsmann brought to the Napster deal. In an article that immediately adjoins that story, this is an article by Uta Harnischfeger in Frankfurt in the same edition of the Financial Times, namely May 7th of the year 2001. This article's headline, Middelhoff Rules Out Any Sale of Music Division. And it reads in part, Bertelsmann, the German media giant, has firmly ruled out any sale of its media arm, Bertelsmann Music Group, or BMG. There will be no sale of BMG, Thomas Middelhoff, Bertelsmann's chief executive, told German daily Süddeutsche Zeitung over the weekend. Last July, the chairman himself had spurred such talk when he told reporters that a sale of BMG was possible under certain conditions. Skipping down again. Mr. Middelhoff said Bertelsmann's alliance with Napster, the U.S. online music swapping company, had changed the situation. He said that in July, quote, I was worried that we could be sandwiched between unrestricted online distribution and stagnation in the CD business, unquote. Well, obviously, the Bertelsmann deal with Napster not only eliminated that, because that gave Bertelsmann a leg up by giving it participation in Napster. I would also note again that, as in the other article pointed out, in arguing with EU regulators on behalf of greater expansion of the music industry and perhaps a projected or a possible Bertelsmann BMG acquisition of Zomba Records would fall under a similar rationalization or similar logic, Middelhoff was using Bertelsmann's alliance with Napster and beyond that, the greater acceptance of online music distribution, as, first of all, changing the landscape of the music business and making it more acceptable to have greater concentration of ownership. He also, perhaps, and again what I've said might be viewed as sort of a business analog to the old Pincers movement stratagem in military strategy, he also argued that having greater concentration in the music business would make it more effective for the music majors to fight online music piracy or internet music piracy and make it easier as well to impose a standardized digital format for legitimate downloads. So these two articles, very important, first of all, for giving some possible insight into Bertelsmann's next move. And again, I think the available evidence, as we've looked at in many broadcasts, is that Bertelsmann may very well be, I believe it is certainly, a Bormann company. And the evidence for that in presented over many broadcasts. Also, I would note that there are detailed and annotated descriptions of the For the Record broadcasts in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com, Spitfire List being one word. I would also note that sister station WFMU-FM has real audio archives of many of the For the Record programs, virtually all of them in this series. Those are available at WFMU.org/Dave Emery, and older For the Record programs available at archive.wfmu.org/archive/D/X/. We're going to review an article now before we move to the discussion of the online music business, the Bertelsmann Napster Alliance, the changes that appear to have taken place in the music industry, at least in part, because of the Bertelsmann Napster Alliance. While Napster itself is in very hot legal water and is viewed by many as dead, I would say that a recent invention of a new software may revive Napster's fortunes, and that at any rate, the Bertelsmann Alliance with Napster certainly appears to have strengthened BMG's financial situation and also perhaps precipitated the acceptance of online music division by the music majors. That in turn is being used by Middlehoff as a rationalization for increased concentration in the music industry. This rationalization being presented to EU regulators, and it'll be interesting to see if that plays into the arrangement or the prospective arrangement with Zomba. Again, there has been speculation that Zomba and Jive Records might very well be acquired by BMG. BMG already owns 20% of Jive Records. We're going to review an article from the Financial Times of Friday, February 23rd of the year 2001. This is an article by Ashling O'Connor. It's headlined, "A Spotlight Turns on the Recluse." And this talks about Mr. Calder, again, a secretive, reclusive South African. He declines press interviews and their website, Zomba Records' website. Not only doesn't say about us, it doesn't even give a contact address or telephone number. And someone familiar with the apartheid regime of South Africa and the genesis of the South African power elite under apartheid, Reed Bruderbond, and someone familiar with the secretive nature of the remarkable and deadly Bormann organization, would certainly at least ask the question that I'm asking here: is Zomba a Bormann company as well? Is Clive Calder an operative of the Underground Reich? Again, that's not a statement I'm making, but a question I'm asking. Financial Times, February 23rd, a Friday of 2001, reads as follows in part. Again, "A Spotlight Turns on the Recluse" by Ashling O'Connor. As the founder of Zomba, which over the past 20-odd years has grown into one of the world's biggest independent music groups, Mr. Calder has been able to go about his business in relative obscurity. Mr. Calder's assistant politely declined a request for an interview with the Financial Times, saying he was not ready to make an exception to his, quote, long-standing no-interview policy, unquote. However, he now finds himself thrust into the spotlight as a central figure in the discussions between two of his rivals to create the world's largest music group. Through a series of shrewd business moves, he has emerged as a potential deal-maker or deal-breaker in the merger negotiations between EMI and Bertelsmann's media group. Skipping down, and even though this refers to the now failed EMI BMG deal, there is now the possibility that BMG rather could acquire Zomba and Jive. Skipping down, observers say the move by Mr. Calder was opportunistic, but was indicative of his nose for a good deal. At the time, Mr. Zelnick was otherwise occupied. Handlis refers to some of the previous maneuvering, handling a dispute with the other Clive Davis, who was pushed out of BMG's Arista Records, the label he founded. Jive successfully defended the lawsuit, but the incident left a sour taste. And this refers to a lawsuit that took place with Strauss Zelnick, a former chief executive of BMG Entertainment. He has since, by the way, been replaced. Close friends and associate of Mr. Calder remain intensely loyal and are uncomfortable talking about him behind his back. even if it is to pile on the compliments, of which there are many. Indeed, it is hard to find anyone with a bad word to say about this man, who has achieved a nearly mythical status in the business. Perhaps that is the genius of a no-press policy. Details of his corporate history are almost as scarce. His press office keeps a tight rein on the flow of information out of the company and zealously guards his privacy. Websites for his businesses feature only the artists. There are no About Us links, not even a contact address or a telephone number. So who is Clive Calder? He was born in South Africa and is now 54. He founded Zomba in London in the late 1970s when he began a career in which he has managed such stars as Billy Ocean, Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, and a tribe called Quest. And skipping down again, he has already been drawn into the discussions between EMI and BMG because part of his company is at stake. BMG has a 20% shareholding in Zomba, which is now based in New York. His business is connected with BMG, so he is clearly relevant to the overall deals as a senior executive who is now involved in the negotiations. Skipping down again, the North American distribution deal between BMG and Jive expires in a few months, and there would be plenty of takers for Mr. Calder's trade should his relationship with Mr. Middlehoff sour. We'll see what happens in that regard. So again, this is hardly definitive, but certainly more than a little interesting under the circumstances. In the second half of this program, we're going to take a look at the Napster deal, the changing landscape with regard to online music distribution, and perhaps some of the maneuvering that was taking place with regard to the Napster BMG deal. We're also going to revisit the subject of Vivendi. That is one of the largest music, largest media companies in the world. One of its properties is Universal Music, the largest music company in the world. And we're going to take a look at Vivendi, an Italian name, but actually a French corporation on whose board of directors Thomas Middlehoff used to sit. And Middlehoff, by the way, I would note, is a good friend of Jean-Marie Messier, the head of Vivendi. I've alluded to other tapes that I've produced over the years. Those are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. Their mailing address is P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. The email address is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. And you can visit their website at spitfirelist.com, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E-L-I-S-T.com. Spitfire List is one word. There are real audio files of the For the Record programs being compiled by sister station WFMU in Jersey City, New Jersey. You can visit their website at wfmu.org/Dave Emory, D-A-V-E-E-M-O-R-Y, one word. And there are older For the Record programs on a related website, archive.wfmu.org/archive/D-X/. There are links to both websites in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. By the time the member stations that carry this broadcast broadcast this program, there will be an annotated and detailed description of For the Record program number 303 on the Spitfire website. Listeners can email me at my home base station, KFJCFM, in the San Francisco Bay Area, at DEMORY@KFJC.org. They can also listen to the three-hour program that I do on that station. That goes from 7 to 10 p.m. Pacific time at KFJC.org. Look in the transmissions and public affairs section. That concludes Side A of For the Record program number 303, Cuddling and Munching. If Music Be the Food of Love, Munch On, Part 4. This is being recorded on May 13th of the year 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.